Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, your host for the show. In 2005, I founded the UK charity Yes to Life to help people with cancer understand and access their choices within integrative medicine. Today, I'm honoured and delighted to be bringing you the remarkable Kelly Turner, author of the truly groundbreaking book Radical Remission, who came on the show in 2015 and whose work in between has been nothing less than spectacular. I'm talking to Kelly on the east coast of the States to find out more about her amazing new initiatives. Hi Kelly, I'm so pleased to have you back on the Yes to Life show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Robin. I'm excited to talk to you again and hear what you've been up to over there across the pond.
Well, I was looking back, and actually, would you believe it, the last time we spoke was on my third show ever, and that was in June 2015, so nearly 5 years ago. Amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
And at that time, Radical Remission was pretty fresh out of the publishers. But it was already beginning to make waves back then. And, you know, I think it really was a case of the right thing at the right time. It just seemed to really strike a chord. There's no book that I've recommended more to people with cancer than yours, I've got to say. Did you ever imagine...
Well, thank you. What about your book? You guys wrote an amazing book.
We did a book as well.
I give it to people all the time.
Good. Great. Thank you so much. Yeah. I just wondered, did you ever imagine back then that it would create the kind of stir that it has?
Oh, no. Not at all. You know, I think when I talked to you, that was 2015, so that was a year after it had come out.
Yeah.
So I was still in that sort of like stunned and shocked place of just, you know, I really was very shocked that it took off like it did. And, you know, I think at that point it was on its way to being in, you know, in 22 languages. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. But I was also thrilled because when I was doing my dissertation research at UC Berkeley, I had to really fight to be able to even study this. You know, my professors were very wary of the fact that I wanted to study something that I won't say no one else was studying, but less than five people on the planet were studying these cases.
Right.
And it felt risky for them to as an institution to stand behind, you know, this phenomenon that sort of seemed untouchable, you know, like it was dangerous to say you were studying these because what did that mean about what you believed in?
Right.
So it was actually really validating to have the book do so well because it was my moment to say, see, like, I'm not the only one who wants to study these cases. You know, like, these cases deserve to be studied and they should be studied. And the positive response to the book just felt like the public was on my side, even if the professors were still skeptical and wary of what, you know, what we're trying to look at here.
Yeah.
But at least the general public is, as you know from your charity work, the general public is excited to learn what they can do to harness their immune system, whether they're fighting cancer or any other disease. And they should be. You know, we should all be excited that we were born with these immune systems. We should be excited that we have, you know, things called natural killer cells inside of us that are naturally designed to kill cancer. You know, like, this is an exciting revelation to know that we have these immune systems that can be stimulated. And Radical Remission survivors show us how they've stimulated their immune systems. And it's... As you can tell, I find it very fascinating, and I'm glad other people do too.
Well, they certainly do. I was thinking how really the internet sort of set the stage for you to come up with this book. It was because, I mean, the chances of knowing anybody who'd had a radical remission in the past were very slim. Of course, in my work, I did know quite a few, but most people had never heard of such a thing. But the internet really started bringing the voices out and sharing them. And I think, you know, that set the ground for, you know, a public who's ready to hear this stuff.
Absolutely. I could not have done my initial research without the internet.
Mm.
And it's a good point. It's a good point because, you know, there were and there still are thousands of cases in the medical journals. But it's such a laborious process for me as a researcher to write to the author of that article, who's usually a doctor, mm-hmm. and say, you know, I'm looking for the patient that you wrote about in this article 20 years ago. Right. I want to know if they're still alive. I want to ask them questions. And then, you know, I have to jog their memory. They're like, wait, which article? I've written 150 articles, you know? And trying to track people down that way was laborious and hard. And yes. I could have done that before the internet, but it would have been a lot of letters and phone calls and stuff. But with the internet, it was amazing because I could find people's blogs and they were writing these blogs saying, hey, I healed from stage 4 cancer after I was sent home to die. Does anyone care? Like, does anyone want to know what I did? Mm. And it was really, once I found them, they were so eager to talk. And the only way I found them was through the internet. So you're exactly right. It's a brilliant point, is that the internet allowed me to do this research in a way that, had I done this before, well, you know, 1997, whenever the internet started, it would have taken so much longer. Mm-hmm. It would have been much harder to find these people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And but how great that you were there as a listening ear, interested in them, because of course, to have somebody validate what was for them a monumental journey, often that nobody's interested in generally, is very hard for them to accept the fact that they achieved something that the medical world can't do, and yet nobody's interested.
Yeah, they were just dismissed. Yeah, it was very healing for them to have me as a, you know, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm a PhD researcher, but just to have someone from the academic world reach out to them and say, can I see your medical records? Can I verify this? Can you tell me more? A lot of them said to me, finally. You know, like, oh,
yeah,
finally,
right.
Someone's paying attention.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'd say things like, can I use your name? And they were like, yes, please. Like, use my real name. I want people to know that it's real and that I'm not lying and that I didn't make this up. Because, you know, it is amazing what they've achieved. And when everyone just dismisses it or ignores it as a fluke, they also started to wonder, you know, well, was this just a fluke? Was it just luck? Or did all of those incredibly hard lifestyle changes that I made have anything to do with this? And, you know, by the time I was on my 50th interview or so, I was able to start saying to them at the end of the interview, you know, just so you know, all the other people I'm studying did these things too. So you're not alone. And this wasn't all for nothing. And it wasn't just luck. You know, the diet really did make a difference. And so that was helpful for them too,
yes.
to know that, that they weren't alone in what they were doing.
Yeah, you've created a new community out of a bunch of loners.
Yeah, and that's great. I'm a very social, extroverted person, so it's great that I get to, like, create a little party of radical remission survivors.
So
I'm happy to play the connecting role.
Right, great. So, yeah, you've got a research background. Now, certainly at the time the book came out, I'm sure that detractors would have said that the type of evidence you were amassing there, you know, personal experience, really doesn't carry much weight and it'll never measure up to tightly controlled, randomized trials. Has anything changed in that way since then, do you think?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think because I'm trained in both quantitative and qualitative research methods, so, you know, I know how to analyze statistical data just like any of them. I was able to really stand up and say, you know, it's too early to do statistical analysis with quantitative data because we don't have hypotheses. So as soon as I was able to justify, you know, the choice of my methods, which was qualitative methods or also known as anthropological methods, as soon as I told them, look, we had to apply anthropology to this group of people because there was no hypothesis to test in a randomized trial. Doctors were not giving us any hypotheses. So in the absence of hypotheses, you have to go back to step one of the scientific method, which is observation. And that's, of course, what anthropologists excel in, is observing these, you know, unique societies, these unique groups of people.
Yes.
And looking for you know, their behaviors and what is this unique population's behavior like? What's their language like? What are their beliefs? You know, so approaching, you know, the problem of spontaneous remission, the problem being no one knew why it was happening, from an anthropological perspective at first, it was absolutely necessary. And as soon as I talked to any sort of doctor or researcher and explained that, they're like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. You need a hypothesis. And so, you know, and hopefully if people have read my book, they know right away from the introduction that these nine common factors are now hypotheses only, right? This is what we've observed in this group of people, but we don't know if it's generalizable to anyone else until we do, you know, now move into quantitative testing. So we now have the nine hypotheses, and now the onus is on us to move it towards quantitative methods, which is, you know, randomized controlled trials. And luckily that's happening, because the book did so well. I was reached out to by a number of different researchers to start studying radical remission survivors in a more quantitative way. And I was so thrilled to get those calls, Robin. You have no idea. You know, just like the survivors were so happy to get my call, and they were like, thank God someone finally wants to study me. When I got the calls from the quantitative researchers, I said, thank God someone wants to help me study these people quantitatively, because I can't, you know, I can't do that all by myself. You need millions of dollars of funding, and you need, you know, statisticians on staff and everything. So I'm happy to report that quantitative research is absolutely underway for radical remission survivors. There are four studies that I know of, and I'm actively a part of two of them. So I can speak to the two that I'm a part of. One is a biotech company reached out to me saying they wanted to study the blood and the genetics of these radical remission survivors. So they wanted to look at them at a very sort of technical blood level.
Yeah.
And I said, fabulous. Let's see if there's something special in their blood. And what they found is over 4,000 unique antibodies were in their blood. And over 100 of those have been sent now to mouse models for further testing. That was a really cool project to be a part of. So I helped them, you know, collect the blood samples from the people in my database. So that's really exciting and very promising that, you know, their hope is that through these nine factors, these survivors have stimulated their immune system, right, to fight back against the cancer. And by doing that, they developed, their own immune systems developed antibodies against the cancer. And so now what this biotech company is trying to do is trying to sort of take a shortcut and just kind of clone the antibody, put it into pill form. So we'll see. You know, part of me wonders, like, can you really cheat? You know, like, can you get the result without having doing all the hard work?
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But hey, I'm just happy that they're being studied. I'm happy that people are and noticing things, right? These nine lifestyle changes really do significantly impact the immune system. And now we have the proof, you know, with these 4,000 unique antibodies. So that's been really exciting, that research. And then this other group of researchers from Harvard University approached me and they said, we want to study these nine lifestyle factors. We want to study, you know, truly what happens to the body when you employ these nine changes. And these are obviously the nine common threads from my book. So, you know, radical diet change, taking herbs and supplements, and then seven mental emotional shifts like stress reduction, increasing positive emotions, developing a spiritual connection practice, and the list goes on and on. But that was really exciting for me to get that call, because that was researchers who actually want to study the nine healing factors, which is where I think the research should go, right? We should study these nine factors and say, if you employ them fully, and if you really, really commit to doing these nine changes, what will the result be for the general public? And so we're in the middle of a pilot study right now with Harvard University, where we're studying sort of the before and after effects of people who go through the Radical Remission Workshop, which is a weekend workshop that we offer over the course of 2 days. So the people who do the Standard of Care Plus the workshop will see if they have fewer side effects, if they have quicker recovery times, if they get through the standard of care better because they're doing these integrative modalities as well. And of course, our hypothesis is, yes, they'll do much better.
Right.
But we'll see.
So in amongst that, so you're obviously going to look at their quality of life through that period, how they actually do under orthodox treatment. Are you also going to have any sort of biomarkers being measured at the same time?
Ab- Absolutely. For the eventual randomized control trial, it will absolutely be biomedical. Right now, for the pilot study, it's an unfunded pilot study, so we don't actually have funding.
Right.
All of us are just volunteering our time, and so there's no chance right now for like saliva testing or natural killer cell counts and that sort of thing. But when we do the randomized control trial, we will absolutely want to test biological markers as well.
Got to start somewhere. Look, I can only just imagine the celebration the day you got the first call for somebody interested to do some real research on the basis of your book. Amazing achievement. I mean, to have 4 trials being done because of your book, it must be something you're immensely proud of.
Yes, I'm thrilled. I can't take the credit, you know.
I think maybe you can.
I don't think I should. I think the credit should go to the amazing, brave cancer patients who found a way to heal themselves when everyone else had given up on them. So I'm so happy to be the messenger. But the real credit goes to the survivors, the people who really defied the odds and just refused to listen to their doctors who said they were going to die.
Well, I'm with you.
I'm happy on their behalf that finally science is paying attention.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing you've achieved, is you got them to sit up and pay attention when they certainly weren't listening before. So I think it's massive.
Right.
So really great. So look, you've got 2 new immense initiatives on the go at the moment. Do you want to tell us about them?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the one is happening right now. March 16th through the 26th, we are premiering the Radical Remission docuseries. So it's I've always wanted to sort of bring my book to life, and mostly I just wanted to let other people meet these incredible people that I got the amazing chance to meet. And so it's ever since the book came out, I've always wanted to make a documentary about the book, and last year, I was given the opportunity to make that a reality, and I jumped it. I jumped at the chance. I actually said yes before they could change their mind. I said yes. Where do we sign? Let's sign on the dotted line. Come on, let's go. So for the last 9 months, it's kind of like I've had a, what's the word for having 10 babies at once?
Octuplets.
What is it? Anyway. It's a 10 episode docuseries, and it's in the process of premiering, you know, this week. So it's really exciting. We filmed all fall. We actually filmed a Brit, Jane McClelland, your lovely Jane.
Yeah, she's a regular on the show. Jane is. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Oh, well, you should have her on and ask her what it was like to be filmed.
I will.
No, you should have her on and ask her what she's learned lately in her research, because she is a researcher.
Yeah,
man, she's always on top of the latest studies. It's really quite incredible. But yeah, we had Jane fly over from London to New York, and we filmed her about her healing story, and we filmed 20 other survivors and 45 PhD MD experts. Put them all into a big, beautiful docuseries that is airing right now on hayhouse.com. That's my publisher of my next book, and they're also the wonderful executive producers of the docuseries. So I'm very grateful to them for taking a chance on it. But it's really exciting for me to sort of visually and in a heartfelt way present the phenomenon of radical remission. Because when you see it from the person's own lips, when you hear it in their own words, and you can look into their eyes, and when you make that sort of connection with these 21 radical remission survivors, and they tell you their entire story from start to finish, the highs and the lows. It's just, I find it very moving. And obviously we're in the middle of a huge world crisis right now related to health.
Yeah.
And we did not plan to launch this in the middle of COVID-19. We just, as of July 1 last year, the launch date was March 16th. And so our launch date has always been March 16th for this docuseries, and it was the first day that my family sheltered in place.
Right.
So it's been, I can't even tell you how surreal it's been. This project that I've put so much time and effort into over the last 9 months, and I was looking forward to this date forever and ever, and then to realize that, the whole world is at home doing, having nothing to do but watch the TV.
Right.
And as a result, we've had, you know, the number of views has greatly exceeded our, you know, our forecasts.
Excellent. And
I'm thrilled about that. It's again, it's one of these weird things where, you know, you said, you know, my book was sort of right place, right time. And I agree it was. And now I'm sort of like, how is this happening again? Like, how is it that the docuseries launched right when everyone had to, like, stay home from school? And but I'm just I'm grateful that it's hopefully helping people during this time of fear. That's my hope, is that it can hopefully help us all take a few more deep breaths, because I'm anxious too. None of us sort of knows what's going to happen with our hospital systems and our economy and our food supply, and there's a lot of good reason to be afraid right now. But as you and I both know, staying in fear all the time is not good for the human body. So it's been nice for me to kind of have to watch the docuseries every night.
Yep.
And just take an hour to not think about COVID-19, but to think about healing.
Yeah. So. Well, there's you know, it's all about self-empowerment, which is just the right message for a difficult time like this. So, look, I have to tell you that just to show you how enthusiastic I am about your docuseries, in order to watch it here on my paid-for metered broadband, which is only free at night, I'm getting up at 4:45 each morning to watch it.
Oh, my God.
And it's so good. Honestly, I'm just a massive fan. I think the juxtaposition of, I mean, as you say, the real world stories. I think somebody in today's episode says something about the authenticity of having somebody sitting there telling their own story, the power of that. But also, you've got some marvellous expert comment there, which is you know, really underpins what the people are saying and supports it, and that's marvelous.
Well, thanks. I'm so glad you're enjoying it. I'm sorry you have to wake up at 4:45 to watch it. That's crazy. I mean, it's I don't know how the internet broadband thing works in the UK, but it, you know, each episode is available for a full 24 hours, so hopefully people can watch it at same times if they,
they
are
can.
Able to.
It's only because I'm in the sticks here, and I have to have satellite broadband is the only kind I can get here. That's why. Most people are fine.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you know, right about now, everyone's very jealous of you living out in the country. I think
it's true.
Those of us who live closer to bigger cities, it's a bit scary to be in a congested urban area at the moment. So enjoy your sticks and enjoy the birds.
Right.
We got some great experts. I'm really thrilled. We went back to my alma mater, Harvard, which is where I did my undergraduate work, and just interviewed some of the most, you know, amazing minds in the world right now. And I was blown away by what they said, because, you know, these aren't, one of them is a researcher who is studying Radical Remission survivors right now. And so obviously I knew that he felt positively towards the idea of studying these cases. But many of the other researchers that we, you know, interviewed at Harvard, I sort of walked into those interviews not knowing if it would be friendly or hostile.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know, you know, these were people who hadn't necessarily written about this topic, but maybe they've studied the immune system, or maybe they've had a couple radical remission patients, and I wanted to get their thoughts on that. So it was definitely a little nerve-wracking to do some of these interviews. The gentleman in episode one, Dr. Lee Nadler, he especially, I was interviewing him because one of his patients is a radical remission survivor.
Hmm.
But for all I knew, he was about to say, like, you shouldn't be making a documentary about this. You're going to raise false hope, you know?
Right.
And instead, he just had the most incredible things to say about his patient, who's a radical remission survivor, and about radical remission survivors in general, and about how they really dig in and take control of their lives. And it was just really cool for me as a researcher to hear someone like him, who, you know, is one of the top NIH, you know, grant recipients in the world in terms of grant money.
How great. Yeah.
For him to be open-minded was just amazing for me. And I thought, wow, okay, if the people here at the, you know, this top institution are having an open mind, we can go anywhere. We can take this research as far as we need to.
The
time has come.
Yeah, 2014, when you were writing your book, you could have never done those interviews. And I think the fact you've managed to do them is in large part due to your efforts.
Well, thanks, Robin. It's nice to think that these last 15 years of hard work are not for nothing.
Yeah.
It's nice to see it paying off, and I'm just happy to be telling the Radical Mission story in a different way, because you tell it in a dissertation to convince other scientists, but only other scientists read dissertations.
Yeah.
And then, you know, someone asked me to put it into a book for cancer patients. And I said, well, you know, I should do that because this research is for them. And so let me write it in a way that they can understand, or that they can, you know, comprehend from the chemo chair when they have chemo brain. Right. I just wanted to make it a little more reader friendly. And so that was the book. And now it's really fun to tell it visually because when you feel like you're sitting across from someone and getting to know them personally, I think the connection is just that much deeper.
Mm.
I'm thrilled. I hope everybody watches it.
Yeah,
it's
well,
great.
Me too.
It's
they
to
should.
Watch.
They should. Not only people with cancer as well. I was just going to say, there's another word you didn't use to describe the relationship between patients and your book, and that is you were writing material they could utilize. And I think that's one of the key things about it, is that, you know, I recommend it to people with cancer because there's information in there they can actually utilize themselves. And you know, this is the stunning difference between the world of research and of healthcare and the public, the people who are actually needing to deal with this problem, is that they don't need the randomized controlled trials to try something that's completely safe and has worked for other people.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I was very surprised to find that these 9 common threads, and it's now actually 10. My new book is coming out next week, actually. They just bumped up the publication date because of COVID.
Right, we're going to get onto that next. We're still on the docuseries at the moment.
yeah. But anyways, I'll say, you know, these 10 factors, because there's the factor of exercise now. But when I was doing the research, I was pretty surprised to find that, you know, this wasn't really complicated what these people were doing to get well. I mean, they were cleaning up their diet. They were taking herbs and supplements that were appropriate for their body. So that's the one factor that gets a little complicated, because you need to, you know, mm-hmm. work with a health professional. And then they're exercising. So that's not very complicated. And then the other 7 are these mental, emotional, spiritual shifts that you make that are free to make. They just take, you know, effort and commitment. But they're absolutely free. And as I was putting together the book, I of course wanted to bring in anybody else who'd ever done any research on any of these 9 factors.
Hmm.
And what I found is that hundreds of studies have been done on these 9 factors, and all of them, and these are randomized control trials, by the way,
right.
All of them have shown that doing these 9 lifestyle changes significantly enhance your immune system, improve your immune system. So increase white blood cells, increase natural killer cells, you know, increase circulation, all that sort of thing. So absolutely, these things are safe and have been absolutely thoroughly studied by other scientists besides me. And they've been shown to significantly strengthen the immune system. So it just sort of makes common sense to bring them into your treatment plan.
That's the phrase.
Whether you're doing conventional medicine or not, you know, because these are things you can do. You know, you can start eating more vegetables, you know, when you're on chemotherapy. You can start exercising or gently exercising, you know, when you're on radiation. These aren't things, it's not an either or. These are absolutely, it's really just a healthy way to live.
Yes.
And if you do them really intensively, at least for this particular group of Radical Mission survivors, it can be a way for them to reverse their cancer. But for all the rest of us, the research has shown that it's just a healthy way to live.
Yeah. So.
So that's empowering.
Very empowering. I am a massive fan of common sense when it comes to this stuff. I've got to say, you can't beat it. It's not in enough supply these days when it comes to things like treating cancer or other chronic diseases. And I'm glad it's coming in the door. Yeah, we really need it. Yeah, so I'm just sort of wondering whether when the film idea came up, whether you came up with a sort of, you know, a biggish plan, and then it's sort of grown into this ridiculously ambitious thing that we now have. It's massive. It's extremely impressive. Was it, or did you have enormous ambitions right from the go?
You know, I'm unfortunately someone who has really big visions all the time. So yeah, it was always going to be 10 episodes because here's the thing, it's 10 healing factors, and I said I can't fit 10 healing factors into 2 hours.
Yep.
I said I can try to fit it into 5 hours, but if we're going to fit it into 5 hours, so what does that mean? 2 factors per episode? And I was like, you know what? Why don't we just do 10 episodes? Because I've got tons of people to film. You know, finding the radical remission survivors to film was not hard. In fact. I made the decision to only focus on 2 per episode because I wanted people to get really connected to these people. But yeah, I mean, I suppose we could have made it easier on ourselves and just done 5 episodes, you know, 2 healing factors per episode. That would have been a lot easier on myself and my family. Mm. But I sort of wanted to see if we could fill an hour per episode. And we could, because these are, you know, diet in and of itself could be its own docuseries, right? Herbs and supplements in and of itself could be its own docuseries. Mm. So many of these factors could be a much more in-depth series all on their own.
Mm.
And because so many of them I felt needed their own episode, I was like, let's just give them all their own episode. Let's not do an episode on diet, an episode on herbs, and then like scrunch all the other mental ones and mental emotional ones together, because that's not...
No,
that's not
that's
accurate
wrong.
To the research, right?
That's wrong.
You know, the people I study believe that the forgiveness that they practiced on the people who hurt them was just as important as the herbs and supplements they were taking.
Yeah.
And so to portray it in any other way than 10 equal parts felt like it wouldn't be representative of the research.
Mm, I think you're dead right.
But it definitely turned into a massive, you know, like when I think about the fact that I just edited like the equivalent of 5 feature films in 4 weeks, kind of want to pass out and die.
Fantastic. Well, I knew you'd been working hard. Anyway, look, I've got to say that I'm always referring to your book in interviews with people and chatting over things, and the one point that comes up more often than any other is that 7 out of the 9 things there are spiritual, mental, emotional, and nothing to do with anything, you know, actual intervention of any kind. So, you know, extraordinary, really, that and that thing in and of itself should shift the needle as to where people's attention is on what needs to be dealt with in order to cure themselves.
I agree. It was shocking to me to find that in the research. I thought I was just going to be hearing about diet till the cows.
Yes.
And, you know, and actually many of my original interviews, you know, up to 15 years ago now, they often started with diet because, you know, here I am, a researcher from, you know, from Harvard and Berkeley, sitting down with them, and I tried to wear a nice outfit, you know. So, and I look a little formal, and I've got a tape recorder going. And so, you know, they would always start sort of, you know, properly, which means, you know, talking about things like vegetables. So it often started with diet, I think mostly because they thought that I would be most open to hearing about that.
Yes.
And then after they were done talking about diet, I would say, and is there anything else? Anything else you felt or worked on that you think had an impact? And as soon as I opened the door for that, as soon as I let them know, like, I am open to hearing about non-physical things. And it was, again, just a simple question, like, was there anything else you shifted perhaps in your thoughts or your feelings or your spiritual practices that you think had any impact? And some of them even were like, oh, you want to hear about that stuff? And I'm like, yes, I do. And they're like, oh, okay, well then I have lots more to tell you. And then they tell me about their angels and their, you know, forgiving their ex-husbands. And they talk about, you know, following their intuition and how somebody wrote them a check for $1,000 and it was a stranger and it broke open their heart and they felt like their healing happened that night, you know. Really, the stories came once I gave them permission to talk about something that wasn't physical. And it makes me wonder, you know, of all the case reports that I've seen in PubMed, you know, PubMed.gov, which is the kind of the Google for academic articles. Yes. So many of the spontaneous remission case reports that you read on PubMed are strictly biomedical. Mm. And I've always wondered, well, why is that? Is it because the only changes that person made truly were physical? Or is it because the person writing the article didn't ask the person if they made any mental, emotional, spiritual changes? Mm. And that's where it really helps that I'm not a medical doctor, because my master's was in counseling.
Right.
And so I came to this project knowing that the people I was counseling who were facing their emotions and processing their emotions were getting through it with fewer complications and fewer side effects. Like, I was seeing that in my practice. And so it was a hypothesis of mine that, you know, maybe this person, when they're sent home on hospice to die, you know, I remember one PubMed article, it said, I sent the patient home on hospice care. He reports filling out his will. And then he presented to my office 6 months later. And I, you know, I was reading that as I was getting trained in counseling. And my first thought was, do you know what it means to write your will?
Right.
But to actually sit, this isn't like a imaginary will, like, oh, let's do this as an exercise. No, this is someone actually writing their will because they think they're going to die. When you do that, if I, you know, because I often in my counseling practice would have people make plans for their funerals and stuff, just as a way to prepare for what was coming. It's incredibly emotional, and it can also be incredibly cathartic to write your will and to face your fear of death through writing your will. And so I think that a lot of doctors who had previously studied, you know, what they called spontaneous remissions were literally only looking at it through a biomedical physical lens.
Right.
And thank goodness I didn't have that lens look through, because I was able to say anything else,
yeah, you know? Excellent.
And it's amazing what came in those interviews after I said anything else. That's when the real gems came through.
Yeah, you know? It was the lion's share, really. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
So look, we're running out of time and you haven't told us about your new book. Come on.
All right. So there is a 10th factor to report on. So it's been 6 years since the first book came out, and I have not felt the need to write a follow-up book because there was nothing new to report. You know, we actually have been getting cases flooding into the Radical Remission website, which is fantastic.
Yes.
You know, like sixfold, right? Like six times what I was getting before the book came out.
Fantastic.
So that's been awesome. And people continue to report using the 9 factors. And so I thought, you know, there's really nothing new to report here, so there's no need for another book. But the one additional factor that kept coming up in all of the new cases was exercise.
Right.
Enough so that it made me go back to my old cases and call these people up and sort of re-interview them specifically about exercise. And it was really fascinating, Robin, because in my initial interviews, often when exercise didn't come up, when I called these people back and I said, you know, look, back when I interviewed you in 2008, 2009, you didn't bring up exercise, you know, and I just want to double check that, you know. And they said, yeah, that's right. No, I wasn't able to go back to the gym for a good 9 months. And I said, okay, well, that's the gym, you know, but were you doing any sort of movement whatsoever? And they said, well, you know, I was walking around the block and walking 2 blocks and 3 blocks. But no, I wasn't, you know, doing hardcore exercise at first because I couldn't, because I wasn't physically strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my big sort of aha moment there was that they were exercising. It's just it wasn't the level of exercise that they previously had done. They weren't running marathons. They were just walking around the block. But for someone who's been sent home on hospice care, walking around the block is like running a marathon
right.
for your body.
Right.
So just this idea that movement is a part of a radical remission survivor's healing journey. It's as much movement as the body can tolerate on a daily basis. And once that became clear, I thought, you know, this is an important enough thing that I need to let the public know. So the 10th factor was really the impetus for writing the next book, and it's called Radical Hope, and it comes out. It's actually out now as of yesterday. I got the call yesterday saying that because of COVID-19, they were, you know, the books are just sitting in the warehouse, and they said people are asking for the book now. So we're just going to ship it now. And
right.
I said, okay,
great.
They
want something to read.
Less publicity. Yeah, less publicity for me.
Yeah.
So the book is out, and everyone who's pre-ordered it should be getting it in a few days. And yeah, and it talks about exercise, but more importantly, I think it does a couple of the things too. Obviously, it updates people on all the research that's been done, not just by me, but by other researchers on these 10 factors. So it's very up-to-date research on the power of diet, the power of exercise, the power of stress reduction. So there's research updates in there. There's also 10 brand new stories that are from my database since Radical Remission came out. So these are 10 new cases. And I also included 2 non-cancer cases, which I thought was important because that's another trend that's been happening since the book came out, Radical Remission. I started getting cases coming into our website, radicalremission.com, that were not cancer cases. Mm. They were people who had had radical remissions from things like multiple sclerosis or Alzheimer's or lupus or heart disease. And he said, you know, hey, I used your 9 factors, but I didn't use them to heal cancer. I used them to heal this other thing.
Right.
And that's a really fascinating finding for me. And I'm sure you're fascinated by it too, Robin, because what it means is that these 10 lifestyle changes are simply fuel for the immune system. And the immune system is what can take care of cancer, but it can also take care of autoimmune diseases. It can take care of, you know, Alzheimer's and other brain-related diseases. It can take care of heart disease, right? Like our inborn immune cells are designed to clean up our bodies, but we need to give it the right fuel to do that cleaning up job. And so 2 of the 10 cases that you'll see featured in Radical Hope are not cancer. Actually, one is a woman with multiple sclerosis, and another one is a woman with Alzheimer's. So I'm very excited to sort of be broadening the landscape.
Yeah, you spread your net. I mean, imagine how many more people this could help if it's opened up to, you know, a whole range of chronic diseases, which there's no reason why not. Fantastic. Just wanted to talk about the title of the book. You've moved from focus on the factors of the remissions themselves, which of course are radical and very remarkable. But now the subject is hope, which in a way is like the fuel for these things to happen. You know, this is the magic ingredient, isn't it? Without which there's not really, you know, there really is unlikely to be a radical result.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of looking at it. We decided to call it, we meaning my co-author and I, we decided to call it Radical Hope because that's what people kept writing into our website saying. They said, you know, we love Radical Remission. It just gives us so much hope. Do you have any more stories? Do you have any more stories? Do you have any more stories of people with my specific diagnosis, right? So we realized they were writing in to ask for more hope.
Yeah.
And so what this book does is it gives them even more reason to hope. And those reasons are based in evidence and science. And I think, you know, there's a difference between false hope and evidence-based hope.
Right.
And what I try to provide to the world is evidence-based hope. You know, these aren't misdiagnoses. These aren't lies. These aren't just, you know, 2 or 3 cases. These are thousands of cases. And because there are thousands of verified cases, that's evidence-based. And because other scientists have done clinical trials on these 10 factors, now we have scientific evidence to show that these lifestyle changes do enhance the immune system. And so it's not false hope, it's radical hope because it's based on science.
Yeah, Fantastic. Well, you know, we recognise that at Yes to Life, and that's probably the reason that your book is the most recommended one of all, because it does that job, which is, you know, it's crucial. It's absolutely the most important part of the whole thing, I think. It's a kind of, the fuel that gets people into gear.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. You can't really do much if you don't have hope that it's going to work.
No. Look, we're out of time. Love talking to you, Kelly. Thanks so much. I just want to pass
Thanks
on
for having me.
Huge congratulations for your achievements in the last years. I mean, what you've done is enormous in terms of what the book, your original book, has achieved, and now what you've brought to follow it up even more. So I wish you more and more success with what you're doing. It's changing the world.
Oh, well, thank you so much. If we can help just one more person, then that's all that we need to do. So
yeah.
I'm grateful to do the work, and I'm happy to share it. And thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure.
All right. Stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, a lot of talk about hope there. Just talking to Kelly about what she's doing, what she's already achieved, gives me hope that finally the message of what amazing individuals have been achieving for decades through their own striving and commitment will be heard, and that this, in turn, will irrevocably change the way that cancer is treated. If you search on UK Health Radio, you'll find that all my past shows, including my original interview with Kelly, as well as many of the contributors to the docu-series, such as Jane McClelland, Dr. Nature Winters, Glenn Sabin, Chris Walk, Dr. Abdul Slocum, Evelyn Page, many of those brilliant people are to be found in past Yes to Life shows. If you're not already plugged into Kelly's docu-series, sign up right away on the Radical Remission page of Hay House's website. It's free to watch right now, and even if you've missed some episodes, you can catch up later. Thanks a lot for listening. I hope you found that inspiring and will want to join me again next week for another Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.